The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk. Winners and sinners. On The Hard Shoulder.
Yes, this week joining me for Winners and Sinners, Edward Hayden, the TV chef, the culinary lecturer as well at the South East Technological University, and Eimear Ní Bhfeirneáin, journalist and owner of Eimear.ie. You're both very welcome. How are you?
Good, Kieran, and yourself?
I'm great. How did you get the weather?
Well, listen, it wasn't too rambunctious down in Greignamana. Always good enough.
No power outage, you know?
No power outage. We had the kettle on straight first thing this morning, which is good. So, yeah, no, we didn't have a power outage. But again, you know, you're looking at people a couple of miles up the road and talking about it on Facebook or whatever. So, yeah, we were just lucky.
Eimear?
Apart from a small section of a gutter, we escaped unscathed, which is great. But unfortunately, for many of our family members nearby are without power. It can be difficult to manage with children in the house. And I think we're just so used to all our modern conveniences. We like to have the coffee in the morning and have the shower and all of that. So difficult for people. But once people stayed safe, that's the main thing. Human life is the most important thing, so that everybody was protected.
Oh, I was really kind of looking down my nose at my kids this morning. Every time they said, oh, can we have some toast? I'd say that there's no power. I'd keep having to explain it. And then 2 minutes later, there I am standing in the shower, pressing the button, thinking, Jesus
we all do that. That's so annoying, actually, when you remember and you're switching on lights and realise.
So you were out with the kettle boiled on the gas and the face cloth.
We had the boiling water put into thermos. We had three thermoses last night sitting on the counter so I could have a coffee this morning. But listen, we got by relatively unscathed. And a shout out to kind of the Good Samaritans, because this morning I went down onto the road and there was a tree fully across the road, entirely blocked. And while I was down there, Dennis Brennan, people know Brennan's shop in the Freshford Road in Kilkenny, and Dennis happened to be going by and he happened to have a chainsaw in the back seat. So we went at the tree. And
good on him.
We pulled it over to the side of the
you
road.
Too.
Well, I kind of observed Eimear more than anything. But you know, that's an important role too as
well. You have a few sticks for the fire now, Kieran, for the next week or two.
Yeah, exactly. So listen, Edward, who's your... You've a kind of a winner. Your winners and sinners are kind of related to a degree this week, because your winner of the week is... No, I know who your winner of the week is. We spoke to him earlier. We'll come to him in a minute. Edward, who's your winner of the week?
My winner of the week, I suppose, is the opposition, you know, the opposition to the government. I know on Wednesday, the Dáil failed to nominate a new Taoiseach after what has been described as unprecedented scenes of disruption that we were all probably glued to. I know my memory on the phone is Video Parliament Ireland on Facebook. I was glued to all the different interjections with regard to that. I mean, listen, it was chaotic. It was, you could suggest, shambolic, but there certainly was a unity of message and a unity of endeavour in which the opposition, you know, objected to the government's attempts with regard to the groupings and people going to form technical groups for speaking rights. So I think, you know, whatever you're thinking about it, I think it certainly was a win for the opposition to kind of say, well, this is not going to happen. I was listening on all radio stations to different people, but the other evening, Catherine Connolly from Galway East, who I'm a big fan of, I think she's fantastic, and she was so animated on the radio, and she always has, you know, this modicum of caution with a little bit of passion thrown in for good measure. But I think it was a case of, you know, the opposition saying enough is enough. And I suppose whatever your political persuasion, you know, there is a sense of people were forced to question what they thought was right and wrong. So I'd say in terms of their brand and in terms of how they've come out smelling of roses, even though they might be putting plenty of rose scented perfume on themselves as well, the opposition were the political winners this week.
Sorry, Edward, I'm not sure I'd agree that that the opposition were winners as much as the government were sinners, because I think a lot of people looked at the scenes in the Dáil, ordinary people, and they were disappointed by them, and they thought there's more important things. Why are they behaving like this? Now, at the same time, though, the government, for me, were the sinners, because they underestimated the fact that we don't like the idea of government TDs sitting on opposition benches. It seems dishonest to us. It doesn't seem transparent. It seems wrong. So finally, Micheál Martin elected as Taoiseach. He should feel like a winner this week, but he had underestimated just how much that was going to blow up in his face. And I think they overestimated, as well, to a degree.
How good a defence it was to say, to talk about kind of standing orders and Dáil procedure. I said, nobody cares. Nobody outside Leinster House cares about standing orders and Dáil procedure. As you say, they just think
it's the look
you're,
of it.
You're kind of the little bit pregnant thing. You're either in government or you're out of government. Yeah. You can't be both.
That's it. And if it's max of a stroke, we don't like it. Yeah. We don't like the whiff of it even. I think the front page then today of the Irish Independent about the lack of women, the fact that there is less women in the cabinet now. We had four, now we have three because Mary Butler is not a full cabinet minister. That is also a black mark, I think, for the government if we're looking at Sinners. That's a mistake, and the fact that they missed their housing targets as well. So with all the talk we've had of ramping up the house building, all the schemes they've talked about, if you look at the programme for government and you get into the detail, it's not imaginative enough and they fail to reach their targets, and they didn't even, we'd say, reach their target last year. So what are we looking at for this year in terms of that new programme for government?
Did you feel sorry for Verona Murphy in amongst it all, Edward?
I suppose it probably wasn't a good week for Verona Murphy as well. I mean, the people of the Wexford area seem a bit divided about, you know, her decision to go into Cian Corla, because obviously she was a robust, lively member of the opposition, and I think they feel that their voice will be less heard. So I think for Verona, and more than anyone trying to settle into a new job, the eyes of the Dáil, the eyes of the country, and indeed the eyes of the world were on her. And she seemed, during any of the conversations that I saw, she seemed to be completely overwhelmed by it and unable to kind of to curtail what was happening to bring law and order. And even when proceedings started yesterday morning at 11:30, you know, I thought she was in the worst of form, and she kind of really felt that she was, you know, under pressure.
She's had a terrible week in her own constituency with those job losses in Wexford as well. Like the fact that BNY Mellon is only retaining 5% of their workforce. So it's been a pretty rough week, I think, for her. And as Cian Corla, you don't have the same a privilege or ability to speak about these issues in your constituency as she would have in the past.
And of course, Matt Carty, it's not nice for someone to stand up and say you're failing on your first test, you know. And I mean, he was very sincere in what he said. So I'd say she always looked completely under pressure this week. And, you know, whatever way she was going to make the decision, it was going to be tough. So I'd say, yeah, it wasn't a good week in the office. I'd say Verona will be on a big gin and tonic tonight down in Wexford to relax after it all, I hope.
She earned it.
But, you know, our constituency colleague, James Brown, so he's got the promotion to the big department, one of the big departments in housing. And I like the 2 week break now, the 2 week hiatus, this sticks in a lot of people's craw, the idea they need 2 weeks off. When it comes to someone like that, you could see why they might need a couple of weeks to kind of get your head around, I mean, all of these different schemes. I don't know how many times I've spoken to Dara O'Brien over the last couple of years. I don't mind admitting, don't fully understand how all of the different schemes operate.
That's part of the problem, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, so you could see why he needs a break, but I'm... 2 weeks is a bit much, isn't it?
I think especially with the aftermath of the storm, now we didn't fully know, and maybe we still don't fully know what we're dealing with. Like, there will be more stories that will emerge in the next 24 hours. So I think the optics are very bad, whatever, about what could they actually achieve if they were there for the next fortnight, I wonder. But at the same time, I think people like to know that the Parliament is sitting when there's something, there's a few very important and significant events after happening. So why are they headed off? They're only just back.
But I think you could do a bit of tire kicking as well in the Dáil, in terms of, you know, you could go through some of the speeches and some of the things. You mightn't necessarily have to go in front of question line. You could do kind of conversations. I think there needed to be an element maybe of treading water politically, you know, that sort of way. So you're staying in the pool and you're just staying afloat. Because obviously, as we all know, with respect, it's the senior civil servants that are kind of, you know, managing the departments to a great degree. So I think there was that opportunity ability to kind of, you know, stay afloat, but yet keep the house running as well while people are getting familiar with their new jobs. And again, of course, the other point around that is, should the kind of the negotiations for programme for government have taken as long as they have taken? There wasn't an ounce of hurry. We were all in the count centres all over the country on the 27th or the 28th of November, maybe both, depending on which constituency you were in. So there's a big clatter of time. That's nearly 2 months of time that you'd imagine. There's nothing overly inventive or innovative in the new programme that it could have been decided and determined before then.
It's not a great advertisement, is it, for the politicians when we don't even notice that they haven't really done any actual work.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, Edward's winner of the week, the Dáil opposition and Emer Sinner, more the government, so kind of more defeat from their point of view than victory for the opposition. So Emer, who's your winner of the week?
Okay, I'm going to sound, I'm nearly going red telling you this, but I have to say it, because in our household, he's the man of the house, Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather, and we've seen firsthand just how hard he's worked this week with keeping the nation up to date with the forecast. So it's been all go, lots of pinging of the phone, lots of video calls, lots of keeping an eye on the weather charts for him. But I think, I know some people think weather warnings now can be very frightening for people, but it's the information sharing and the explaining of it so that people can prepare themselves for what's to come, and so that if anything needs to be done, like the trampoline needs to be secured or anything else, that we've all got good warning. So I look over his shoulder sometimes when he's being contacted by the followers and the phone is lighting up, and seriously, Kieran, even the sight of the amount of DMs coming in, I get stressed thoughts, because I like to get back to people and reply to them. He just seems to be able to manage it, take it in its stride, and fair play to him. It's his hobby. He is a self-confessed weather nerd, so he loves keeping people up to date. He genuinely loves weather events as well, and to know kind of what's happening, and he happens to have the knack of being able to speak English quite clearly as well.
Was it ever thus? Was he always into it?
I think so. So obviously, we met later in my life, but I have photographs that his mam, he'll kill me for this now, but his mam shared with me of him as a little boy in the snow. And he's always had an obsession with snow and really interested in where the snow comes from. So I think that's where his hobby started. And he's actually heading off to Norway very soon on a snow trip with a photographer, Bernard Geraghty, to look at and to take photographs of the snow. So definitely always been into the weather.
And I mean, when you say it's his hobby, like, to such a degree that if there's not much happening, it's your standard kind of stretch of
he's
typical
miserable,
mild
boring
Irish
weather, he calls it. He has to look elsewhere, the charts, he'll be looking at other countries. There'll always be something, there'll be some storm brewing out somewhere else in the ocean, in some far-flung destination, and he'll be telling me about it. Now, I'm not the best listener when it comes to all the weather events, so people will always ask me in Tesco and Tullow, oh, Emer, what's the weather going to be like? So I'll just warn you now, the information I give out is not always accurate. You're better off to ask Alan directly.
And tell me this, I mean, would people be getting in touch with him in advance of going on holiday somewhere, asking him
yes.
whether overseas? Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. All the family and a lot of people, we'd say, who are going to Spain for a weekend, or they want very detailed forecast. Golfers, a lot of the time, they nearly expect him to hover over.
They need to monetize this. There needs to be a fee.
Farmers, actually, it's a huge thing, obviously, for farmers. And for people running events like race, like Goran races, they had Thaiste's Day, as you know, Kieran,
yeah.
yesterday. So Eddie Scally was on to him. And there's people who want detail, because a lot goes into planning an outdoor event, especially in Ireland. But yeah, for abroad, it can come in handy. Sometimes people can be very disappointed. And that's why maybe he's better at this, because he's less sensitive. But I'd hate to break bad news to a bride on her wedding day, that kind of thing. But he finds a way of saying it. But often it's people looking for very specific information about an event coming up.
Is there ever blowback?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, he gets it wrong.
Oh, the abuse he gets. And one of his hobbies, apart from forecasting, is blocking people online. So I'm amazed that he has as many followers, because unlike me, I will not censor at all. I'll put up with a huge amount. His policy is block early and block often. So if you're talking about chemtrails, or if you're a conspiracy theorist, he'll have absolutely no time for it whatsoever.
There you are now. That's a worthy winner of the week. Alan was on the show with us earlier, and you can listen back actually to that interview. It's available as a podcast. It's on the News Talk app. So, Edward, who's your sinner of the week then?
I'm hoping when he was on earlier that he spoke in as complimentary terms of Emer as she has about him. Or did he mention there could be a stormy night at home every so often?
Now he's at home listening to that going, oh jeez, I didn't even mention her.
Yeah, absolutely. My sinner of the week, Kieran, is all those that have bought all the bread. Where are they going with all the bread, for Jesus' sake? They must be going
to
make
fort. Next week.
Honest to God. Yeah, maybe remember Lady Gaga in the cured meats. So they might be doing a bread version of that. It was so funny. It was incredulous to see the amount of people who put up pictures on Facebook and on Instagram of like empty supermarket shelves. I went to the supermarket myself yesterday just to do a normal shop. And not a kind of a thinking that I was going to be locked in for 6 weeks or something, but there wasn't a loaf of bread to be got. Now, I bought a carton of buttermilk, so I made some lovely bread.
Oh, lovely.
But what are they doing with all the bread is what I want to know. They're coming out from trolleys between bread and wine and toilet roll. I tell you, it's a kind of a combination of sorts. But people do panic.
Yeah, but I was surprised people. I get the snow panic.
Yeah.
People think maybe, you know, it's going to last. In for a few days. It could freeze like we had a couple of weeks ago, and then, you know, you still can't get out. But when Met Aaron and Alan say, listen, the red weather warning is going to go from 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. You know, it's 8 hours long. Mm. You know, and
you're sleeping for most of it.
Even sleeping for most of it. And all the shops are saying, like all the shops certainly in Kilkenny opened at 11. Most of them, anyway. Between 11 and 12, they all opened. And I'm sure it's the same everywhere around the country. Within 90 minutes of the red weather warning being downgraded, they were opening. I mean, how much bread did people think they were going to go through between waking up at 7 or 8 in the morning?
I bet there's a historic significance to this. I bet it goes back to famine times.
Yeah, possibly. But of course, the bigger message...
cultural trauma.
Stockpiling. But the bigger message, of course, as we all know, that with regard to food and food poverty and food waste, I mean, food waste is such a massive, massive thing. Mm. Bread does not last. I mean, if you buy a loaf of bread, you know, sometimes, you know, by the time you get to the end of it, it could be even gone mouldy if you're not a huge bread eating house.
So
pick out the bit of mould
and toast it. Exactly.
But the point being, where is all this bread going to end up? I'm going to do, I think, a mystery basket shopper of the brown bins of Greignamana and the wider areas to see, because people have to be throwing it out or else they have freezers that are full. I don't think it would be humanly possible to eat all the bread
the
that people are buying.
Now, I know we're probably not supposed to feed them bread anymore.
Yeah, it's all kind of seeds.
You're not meant to feed them bread anymore?
No, it's probably kind of the seeds and different lean seeds and the fat
sunflower
balls
seeds
and things like that are what people are really advocating.
If I throw those out, the dog will lick them up off the ground. But if you throw out the bread, he'll ignore it.
Okay. Yeah. That's the only way the birds can survive
it's
in Cathacuddy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And all these birds exploding from it. What would always be funny is... around harvest time when the grain would be coming into grasslands and places, you know, you'd see the pigeons would eat so much that they couldn't actually fly. They'd be so fat. You know, they would just... Because they have no off button. It's just kind of a survival thing that they've evolved with. And then you'd kind of come back 10 minutes later and there's just a load of feathers in the air and some fat fox, you know, off in a hedge somewhere with a nice plump
I see that with the crows
pigeon
at Circle K near the drive-through McDonald's in Carlow. Did you notice the crows look fatter around there? So they're obviously picking up the
around Shinryland. There's a big thing around that,
there's
isn't there?
Crows.
Yeah,
there's an obesity crisis among
them. Yeah.
God.
Someone we need a fitness for the crows in Tin Ryland.
Someone tell Ava Horseman. And they're only after getting rid of Operation Transformation.
Yeah. There's a new animal version coming here. And we could maybe have the monopoly on that.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a
yes, Eamonn Vernon and Edward Hayden are still with me for the last bit of the show. And Edward, I know you wanted to bring up something we talked about during the week. The Reverend Richard Coles, he of I'm a Celebrity fame, joined us to talk about the person you want to mention, which is the Episcopalian Bishop, Marion Budd, speaking to Donald Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, again, we were talking about the eyes of the world being on Leinster House, but I think certainly the inauguration of President Donald Trump was something that people were watching with great interest. And there is this sense, I suppose, of, you know, a political and economic foreboding about his inauguration and, you know, the spectacle that it is and the messages that he gave as well and what he was going to do in terms of even the executive orders that he did very shortly after coming into office. But I suppose it was the eloquent inculcations by Bishop Marianne Edgar Budd at the Washington National Cathedral during that prayer service, the inaugural prayer service, where she implored the president in her sermon to have mercy upon the people of the country who were scared now. I mean, her language, I think, was very simple. She was so poised and deliberate in what she had to say. She went on to purport that, you know, the people that were scared were the asylum seekers, were the immigrants, there were the LGBTQ plus community. And she asked him to show mercy. And, you know, regardless of anybody's religious persuasion, you know, just being a good civil-minded person, you know, that invitation to be kind and to show mercy. I mean, I think mercy is such a fantastic word, you know, both the positive and the negative connotations of it. But to show mercy to people is a wonderful invitation. She gave the invitation to President Trump. It was a very brave thing to do. She certainly has shown no contrition subsequent to doing it for doing it.
And she's been up against it.
100%. She's
had the backlash.
Absolutely. Huge backlash, but also huge support. Again, I just saw there this morning before I came into you that, you know, people now have posted her address to send her a postcard. There's this kind of like, not necessarily a chain letter, but to kind of to give like a tsunami of support to her.
She's shown real leadership and she's been so brave because, okay, on this side of the world, we might say, oh, more people would agree with her. But from where her position was, and like she had a real opportunity to speak up for the most vulnerable. And President Trump barely flinched when she said what she said, and then he subsequently came out and really dissed her and basically said she's not very good at her job. So I think that just even considering all of that, I just think she's absolutely, I'm delighted that you mentioned her, Edward.
Yeah, and you see there's all this conversation then about weaponizing the pulpit, and the pulpit should be kind of politically uncharged. But again, the counter message to that is that she is a woman of God, she's a woman of the cloth, you know,
Christian
one of
message.
God's chosen to be his ambassador or representative, whatever persuasion she is religiously. But that is the simple core message, to show mercy. So I don't see it as politically charged. I think that is the message of our God, whoever we think our God is, because our God is supposed
Trump
to be kind and loving.
Mentioning God so much as well,
for sure,
in his inauguration speech and everything, I think that I found that particularly interesting. Just taking a step back from that, because he's been doing that more so in the past 12 months or so. The language that he's using, it's been, you know, God is mentioned a lot more now.
But it's an a la carte-ism to what he believes God's message is.
That's it. So the fact that she had this opportunity and it was beamed all over the world. It's just really, really powerful.
Speaking truth to power is, you know, to a degree is never easy, and it requires a degree of bravery. It particularly does in the world we live in, doesn't it? I would say, I don't know, is she on Instagram or Snapchat or Facebook?
She's fairly big on it now.
But I mean, the amount of hate she must have been.
Yeah, even her address. If her address has been shared for postcards, I'd automatically think, wow, like, hopefully, she'll be okay, because it's a very threatening world we live in now, in terms of personal safety and online hatred, and it's very easy to walk out of somewhere after you say something and you've a target on your back all of a sudden.
Yeah, and Donald Trump is not the type to call back in the dogs once they've been let loose. Either. So anyway, listen, Marion Budd is a worthy mention as well. Kind of the other end of the spectrum, Eimear, you want to talk about Skibidi?
Yes, I'm so sorry. This is pretty do you know what? It doesn't seem very important after everything that Edward's mentioned. But in our house, I'm trying to get my head around this. All these new words, especially last year. There's some of them that haven't even been mentioned in this, but the Oxford Dictionary has three new slang words in there that I heard a lot of last year. Slay, which is used for almost everything that's impressive or good, or you're looking slay, or that's so slay here. And I'm probably going to be told now by a 10 or 11 year old that I've said it wrong. That's one of them that made it in there. Skibbity can mean lots of things, good or bad, crazy stuff. It could be skibbity. Some words that didn't make it in there is Riz, actually, and I'm hearing so much about
Riz didn't get in.
Riz didn't get in. Now, Edward might
Justice
say you're full
Riz.
Of Riz. I'll let you Google that afterwards.
R-I-Z, is it?
R-I-Z-Z. And Sigma made it into the Oxford Dictionary. So Sigma, again, is good or cool. So lots of these words, you'll hear them from the Gen Zs, as they call them. It's kind of slang, but what was really nice about an article that I read during the week is that kindness was the top word of 2023 for young people. So obviously that's something that's really important, and we can be quite negative, I think, about Gen Z and, you know, but kindness is up there. So that's kind of nice.
It wasn't that they were Googling it, wondering what it is. This is words that people are telling me to be
Hopefully
more of.
Hopefully they were demonstrating it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they're slay, though. You know.
You think they're slay. You can't try and use their words, Eimear.
What is the Riz?
No, I'm sorry.
Have we to Google it? I'll have to Google
You'd
it.
You'd have to Google it. It's something to do with like Rizless, no?
No, or let's Rizless. Just say charming.
Okay.
Attractive.
All right.
When you start with the skippity, I remember the skippity doodah, skippity day.
That's about it. Listen, thanks a million, both of you.
Thanks, Kieran, for the offer.
Studio. Listen, it was great to see you. Eimear Ní Fhearnán is a journalist and the owner of Eimear.ie, Edward Hayden, TV chef, culinary lecturer at the South East Technological University. I hope those without power will not be without power for too much longer. Stay safe this weekend. Talk to you on Monday from 4.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.